For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. November the 13th, Derech Hashem, we're starting the second Chelek. And we're going to try to do the first two Prakim because the first Prak is very short in the second Chelek. And now we really get into Hashgacha and the way Hashem runs the world. And we're going to really start to dissect it. And tonight, we'll give a little bit of introduction and then go through some of it. But you're going to see that he really breaks it down, exactly how Hashem decides reward, punishment, how much, how little, where, when, who, what. It's very, very, very specific. He will say, and I think this should be clear to everybody, that we never really know which method or which, the best word would be, system, which paradigm Hashem is using at any given moment and for any given person. But we will see all the various choices that there are, all the various possibilities that could be going on. The main thing is that we tend to be very limited when we see a good thing or a bad thing happening. And we tend to automatically assume, you know, a bad thing happens, the person must be a bad person. A good thing happens, the person must be a good person. So we're a little more sophisticated than that. That's the way most of the world thinks. If they believe in Hashem, that's the way most of the world thinks. Or that's the way most of the world thinks that God-fearing people think. That when bad things happen to a person, it's because they deserved it. Good things happen because they deserved it. We're a little more sophisticated than that. We know that there's other reasons. But for most of us, those other reasons are kind of vague. And what we're going to see, both this week and the following weeks, as we go along in this chelek, we're going to see that there are several different possibilities so that we won't be able to pick out what's happening at a given moment, but we'll know that there are various choices. Now, the it's self-evident, really, from what he said last time. And we all know this already, but we'll say it anyway because he emphasizes it, and we should emphasize it anyway, that what the Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning, Hashgacha means, it doesn't mean to make sure it's kosher, right? Lahashgiach means to pay attention. So the Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the world is completely different for a human being than it is for the rest of creation. For everything else, animals, angels, the world, the stars, Ruchnius, Gashmius, everything else has one type of Hashgacha, and human beings have a different type of Hashgacha. And the reason for this is that everything else is never the cause of anything. Everything else is always the result of something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created he created a fly. The fly was created with all kinds of instincts, and all kinds of it's programmed to do whatever it's supposed to do. And the fly will do whatever it's supposed to do based on the way it was programmed. And it will do it. And if nothing else happens, then we mentioned this last time, if you were sophisticated enough, you had a sophisticated enough computer, and you knew the whole program of the fly, you could enter it in and you would know exactly what the fly would do in every second of its existence, from the time it is created till the time it dies. You would know. And that would be true of the entire creation, of everything. Every single blade of grass and every single large star and comet, and you would know every single drop of water. You would know exactly, if you knew all the variables and all of the programming, you could program in it, you would know everything that's going to happen. The truth is, variable is the wrong word, because there are no variables. You would just program it all in, and they would interact with each other, and it would just happen. And you could know the future, because you'd be able to know the program. That's because everything other than human beings are reactive. They don't cause anything. They are affected. They are affected by Hashem's program in them, that they will do whatever they're going to do, and then they're affected by when everything else, what a fly is flying, and a leaf is being blown, and they bang into each other. So one affects the other. But they're both results of what Hashem had already put in motion. Human beings create, as we mentioned last time, and human beings cause. We're also affected. We're affected by everything, but we also cause. Because when we make choices, we affect everything else. So we are the source of things happening. We're not just the result of things happening. We mentioned this last time. It's mind-boggling to consider that the power Kadosh Baruch Hu put in our hands. We're merely creatures that were created. Why should we be given that much power? It's just unbelievable. So, therefore, the hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on people has to factor in people's choices. So, therefore, the hashgacha on a blade of grass, on a leaf, on a bird, on a planet, is all there from Sheshes Mei Breshes. Hashem put it in motion. And in theory, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could go play golf. He doesn't have to do anything. It's all there in motion. It's all there already. But human beings are constantly changing the script. Every second of our day, we're changing the script. Every second of our day. Not only that, the script has infinite possibilities. I don't know if it's mamish infinite or if it's just so large it's impossible for anybody to figure it out. Think of all the choices every single person can make from the time they're born till the time they die, from the creation of the world till the world ends. So the variables are so great, it's just impossible to... So there are so many different possibilities that the hashgacha has to constantly... it's hard to say this about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but has to mold itself to fit the way that choices are made, the way people are choosing, the way things are happening. So that your choice, which is going to affect me, and then my reactive choice to you is going to affect her, and then that reactive choice is going to affect her. And who says that you deserve all of that? Not necessarily. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to, right? So it becomes very, 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 very complicated. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashgacha with human beings is both the regular hashgacha of there is a program that's set in motion. There are things that we can't change. The things that we call mazel, they're in place already. Right, the Gemara says how tall you are, how short you are, how strong you are, how weak you are, how smart you are. There are various things that are just not that you can't change, and then there are certain things you can change based on your choices. You know, so you can take the amount of intelligence you have, and you can decide to use it really well, or to train yourself to use it really well, or you can ignore it. And you know, you can have natural, incredible intelligence and end up acting like a very foolish person. So you know, that's where choice comes in. That's where free will comes in. So again, it's self-evident from what we learned last time. But again, just focusing ourselves on this, it's really an amazing thing. Now, within the hashgacha of people, which is really what we're interested in, within the hashgacha of people, so we know that the purpose, the ultimate place that a person is meant to be, meaning we were each created, every single one of us was created, and we were created to exist in a particular place. That place is Olam Haba. That's where we are meant to be. We're meant to be in Olam Haba, and that's where we are going to spend most of our existence. Olam Haba is much longer than Olam Hazeh. Forever is always longer than anything else. Right? So that's where we're going to be. And why don't you pull it all the way close to the principle? Thank you. That's where we're meant to be, and that's the original place that we were created to be in. However, we know, we learned already, that Hashem created this world as a prelude to that world. And it is in this world where choices are made, and our goal we'll talk about goals in a minute. But choices are being made in this world, and things are happening in this world. But ultimately, we're meant to be there. The choices that we make in this world, the goal is perfection, shlemus. Or another way to put it is dveikus, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which are both the same thing. Or Tov, which is also the same thing. All those are the same idea. The Ramchal writes that the Shlemus that is the goal of creation, or we can even say the goal of humanity, which is the goal of creation, has always, constantly, has two parts to it. There is the klal and the prat. So there's the general shlemus of creation, of humanity, and then there's the individual shlemus. Each one, and it's both are going on simultaneously. Now, tonight's discussion is only about the klal, even though we're going to talk about individual people. But we're talking about individual people as part of the klal. The discussion about individual people, about the prat, is a whole different discussion, which we're going to have later on, Mirtz Hashem. But tonight is a klal discussion. So, because as we learned, the way Hashem made the world is that we should be able to earn our shlemus, so to speak, which means that our shlemus is real because we're more doma to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that shlemus can only be if you're doma to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if we wouldn't be earning it, it wouldn't be shlemus, because then you're not like Hashem. We talked about that already. Therefore, there has to be free will. That is the one component which is non-negotiable. When Hashem created the world, the thing that had to be here was free will. Because without that, the whole thing is irrelevant. The whole thing is pointless. So there had to be Bechira. Because there's Bechira, therefore, it is natural that of all of humanity, I'm talking about every human being created from Adam Rishon till the end of time, there's the potential that everybody is a tzaddik. There's the potential that everybody, chas v'shalom, is a rasha. And there's the potential that some people are tzaddikim and some people are rashai. We presume the middle one is the more likely scenario. But there was the potential, from the time Hashem created the world, there was the potential that every single person would be a tzaddik. There was also the potential, chas v'shalom, that every single person would be a rasha. And there was the potential, and is the potential, that people be, some will be tzaddikim, some will be rashai. That's natural. When you set in motion a system that has bechira chavshis, then that's the potential. That can be that you could have all tzaddikim, all rashaim, or some and some. The ultimate shlemus in Olam Haba, I'm talking about of the klal, is that whoever ends up being a rasha, now don't be afraid of this, and don't allow yourself to feel bad for this, because we're going to define it a little bit more clearly. But in order for shlemus to happen, all the rashaim need to be eliminated. They need to be gotten rid of. Because for there to be shlemus by definition has no bad in it. It has to be completely good. It has to be completely tov, completely shalem, completely davuk. Therefore, all those people that potentially choose rishus, they have to be eliminated, gotten rid of, removed from existence. While those who choose to be tzaddikim, they're the ones who need to enter Olam Haba, and shlemus is achieved. I'm talking about a klal level. That has to happen. Therefore, there has to be a mechanism in place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can rid creation of Rishayim. Creation doesn't only mean Olam Hazeh. It doesn't only mean while we're alive. I don't know what you should say. It doesn't only mean while we're alive. It can mean after we're dead. But there's got to be a mechanism in place where the Rishayim are removed. And the only thing left is Tzaddikim. By the same token, every individual person has the potential of every single action that we do being tzidkus, and chas v'shalom, every single action a person does being rishus, and the potential of some being tzidkus and some being rishus. And again, what's the most likely thing? That people are going to be a murkav, a hybrid of tzidkus and rishus. And we all know that that is generally the case. It's rare that someone is completely a tzaddik and completely a rasha. Tzaddik gomer, rasha gomer, very, very rare. Most of the time, we're talking about people who do both. And I think all of us around the table would admit that we like to think that we generally are tzaddikim, but unfortunately, we're not always like that, and we sometimes do things wrong. So, it means we are a murkav. So that means, for olam haba purposes, where everybody has to be a shalim, it has to be completely shalim, completely davuk, completely tov, what happens to a person who has some tzidkus and some rishus? What happens? So this is where we're going to get several different possibilities. First of all, let's take it in a very simple level. One of two things has to happen. Either the rishus of the person is somehow gotten rid of, is shaved off, is discarded. All that's left is tzidkus, and that person is part of that klal of olam haba that is shalim, that is davuk, that is tov. That's one possibility. Of course, that's the possibility we hope for. The other possibility is somehow the tzidkus is chas v'shalom shaved away, discarded, removed. All that's left is of that person is rishus, and the person is therefore discarded. Does not get involved in olam haba. They're removed from the scene. They're eliminated from existence. One of those two things has to happen. You can't have at the end of time a chalent of good and bad. It's got to all be tov. So how does it happen? So we know that there's schar v'onish. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is, now we're going to move in increments here. So this is not the end all and be all. We're going to start this way. That if a person is generally a tzaddik but has some rishus, that rishus needs to be discarded prior to Olam Haba. So what Hashem does is brings yisurin, he brings afflictions in Olam Hazeh on the person to shave away, discard, remove all of the rishus, so that when the person dies, all they have left is tzidkus, in which case that person is now set for Olam Haba. It's done. This person is part of that klal of shleimus for Olam Haba. If a person is basically a rasha, but has a few things of tzidkus in the person, Hashem can't just ignore that. There is some tzidkus there. That tzidkus has to be dealt with. The Midas Hadin doesn't allow to just forget about the tzidkus. Therefore, that tzidkus has to be taken care of. And the same system applies. That in Olam Hazeh, the person is given all kinds of pleasure in order to use up that tzidkus. So that tzidkus becomes shaved away, not because it's thrown away, just it's used up, it's gone. They got their reward. And then when they die, they're nothing but rishus, and then they are eliminated from creation, from humanity, so that they're not involved in Olam Haba.
I thought that a person can never be, the schar of a mitzvah is so great that all of Chai Olam Hazeh can't.
That's an excellent kasha. The Rosh Yeshiva Zecharei Racha Weinberg asked this question. He was never happy with the answer. He never had an answer that satisfied him. There's an answer there's an answer that satisfies me, which I'll share with you, but I recognize that the Rosh Yeshiva for sure thought of this answer and didn't like it. So I can't be confident in this answer being the right answer, or I should say it this way. Even if it is the right answer, I'm confident that there are problems with it that I'm not realizing. The Rosh Yeshiva knew far too much to not have thought about this. Even though I never talked about this specific answer with him, but I was present when he asked your question and he said he doesn't like any answers. But the way I've always thought of it is that for a Rasha, Olam Hazeh is very valuable because this is what they hold of. Olam Haba is not valuable to the Rasha. Now, it's true that if once the Rasha would die and enter Olam Haba, they would realize how foolish they've been. But Lamaisa Ba'asher Husham, the Rasha values Olam Hazeh the same way that we value Olam Haba. And therefore, giving that Rasha great food and great wealth and great power and fast cars and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, that for the Rasha is so valuable that it eats up his mitzvahs. Now, that's the way I've always thought of it. I imagine that part of the Rosh Hashiva's problem with that is that who cares what he's thinking? Lamaisa, from an objective standpoint, it's not worth it. The mitzvah isn't worth, you know, the mitzvah is far more valuable than that. Okay, so I don't have a good answer for you, but I feel like if it bothers Rosh Hashiva, it can bother us too. But this, as you see, is part of the answer to Tzadik V'Ra'lo and Rasha V'Tovlo, because of this system. Now, that's all fine and good if the rishus of the tzaddik is such that it can be discarded with yesurim in this world, with sickness and poverty and whatever kinds of other issues can go on in this world, right? That would be fine. It's not fun to think about that, but that would work if the surim of this world would effectively get rid of his rishus. But sometimes the rishus is so great that yisurim in this world wouldn't get rid of it all.
Like what?
What kind of averus? The person is a murderer, if the person is anything, right?
Yeah.
The person still may have enough tzidkus that they're not the type of Rasha that Hashem would discard their tzidkus and destroy them. They have enough tzidkus that Hashem wants this person to get into Olam Haba, but the rishus is so great that Yisurim in this world isn't going to cut it. That's why there's Gehenna. The purpose of Gehenna is really to tip the scales so that the vast majority of people can make it into Olam Haba. You see, the way we describe it in Tehillim without Gehenna, essentially, those who have more more mitzvahs than averus, they'll make it into Olam Haba. Their averus will be paid off in this world, and now they're perfect for Olam Haba. Those who have more averus than mitzvahs, it's the opposite. So that doesn't tip the scales towards more people in Olam Haba. But by creating Gehenna, what Hashem has done is he set up a system where even averos, even rishos that can't be discarded in this world, could still be discarded after a person dies, so that that person can still be Olam Haba. What he calls that yisurei hanefesh. There's yisurei haguf, which are pretty bad, but yisurei hanefesh are much worse. Afflictions of the soul are much worse. A Gehenna is much worse than all pain of this world. As much as pain in this world is a terrible thing, and it scares me to think about pain in this world, because there's a lot of pain in this world, but yisurei hanefesh are worse. And even terrible, terrible averos, rishus, that can't be shaved off in this world, Hashem created a system where they could be shaved off after death, so that there are people who can still make it into Olam Haba because they can still become completely Tov, even though when they died, they weren't yet completely Tov. That can happen too. There's no equivalent like that for mitzvahs. Meaning, with mitzvahs, it's either this world or it's Olam Haba. There's no equivalent of Gehenna. There's no like place where, well, after death, you can get a little bit of reward and then get destroyed. There's no such thing. It's either the reward in this world then completely destroyed, or it's Olam Haba. So that tips the scales for Olam Haba, for more opportunities for Olam Haba. Okay. This is where he makes the point that we never know who's getting what. There are some people we can guess, right? Hitler Yimach Shemo got all of his reward in this world. and he's destroyed. He's beyond. He's completely obliterated from existence. I don't know if he's yet obliterated or if he's still getting punished next week, and then he'll be obliterated. Whatever it is, but he's obliterated. That's for sure. And we can be pretty sure that Obel Yashav is right. We're pretty sure about. But for most people, we don't really know. We don't know how it's working. We just know these are the systems that are in place. When we talk about Rishus and Tzidkus, this really is self-evident from what we said before. It's not simply, okay, he's got a list of mitzvahs, a list of averus, so there's some Tzidkus, there's some Rishus, and then there has to be a cheshbon of what happens to the person. The Tzidkus the person does becomes a part of the person. It becomes a piece of the person. A person is defined by their tzidkus. And chas v'shalom, the rishus a person does becomes a piece of the person. Defines the person. So it's not like, I mean to say, it's not like, okay, there's a score sheet and the person just, there's a score sheet up in Shamayim and then just, okay. The person themselves, if you're looking with the right lenses, which we don't have, they're actually, you can see it. The person reflects that. Their neshama reflects it. Their guf reflects it. The person is, everybody here, Lahavdil, read a picture of Dorian Gray?
No.
It's one of those things they assign your son in high school. The plot of that story is that the person was able, through illicit means, to... The premise is that when a person does bad things, their body reflects it. They become ugly and wrinkled and, their hair falls, whatever, right? That all happens to the person as they do bad things. And that this person was able to have all that bad go onto a picture, of a portrait of him instead of himself. So he looked pristine and beautiful and young and everything like that, and all of the negatives happened on this portrait, on this picture of him. That was the theme of the book. So the Lahavdal of Lahavdalis, but I'm saying the looking through the correct lens, all of the tzidkus and rishus of a person is not minachutz. It's mibifnim. It's here. It's within the person. It defines the person. It is the person. Now, when does HaKadosh Baruch Hu decide that the person is going to have their averus shaved off? And all that stuff is the mitzvahs, either shaved off in this world, shaved off in Gehenna, but all of that stuff is the mitzvahs, that person will be part of the greater klal of Olam Haba. And when does the person, Hashem, decide, well, this person, it's all rishus, and therefore we're going to shave off his tzidkus, and he'll be obliterated? How does he decide that? We don't know how he decides that. We have to presume that it's based on an overwhelming amount of rishus and a very little amount of tzidkus. That's what we have to presume. But that if it's not overwhelming, even if it's more rishus than tzidkus, still, HaKadosh Baruch Hu may choose that this person, we shave off his rishus in this world, in Gehenna, and that he's left for Olam Haba, for Nitzchias. It's possible, even though he has more averus than mitzvahs. But Olam Haba itself is not uniform. It's not that there is one level of Olam Haba for everybody. Olam Haba is varied depending on how much a person has earned and how much shleimus. How much, even though we're saying that Olam Haba has to be kulo tov, kulo davuk, kulo shalem, there can't be any rishus in Olam Haba, but there still are levels of how much dveikus, how much shleimus, how much tov. There is that. And that is completely dependent on how much we've acquired, how much we've been kind of. That's what it's completely dependent on. There is a minimum level of tzidkus that a person needs in order to be able to be part of that klal. What that level is, we don't know, but there's a minimum level that there is. That with that minimum level of tzidkus, the person is able to be a part of this klal. They're able to be affected by what Olam Haba is all about. They're able to grow close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because remember, in Olam Haba, we all of a sudden are, all of the Gashmi is, we all of a sudden recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember we talked about how before the Chet, a person did a mitzvah, the person would immediately, incrementally rise towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After the Chet, we only rise tiny little bits, but our, what's accruing to us is much greater. And then as soon as all the Olam Hazeh is stripped away, we immediately end up much closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So a person has that, as long as they've hit that minimal level, they can get into Olam Haba. And then their rishus will end up being stripped away, somehow or other, in Olam Hazeh, in Gehenim, because they've reached that minimal level. But there's many, many more levels. That minimal level is just to decide whether they're an Olam Haba person or whether they're an obliterated person, God forbid. But then there are many, many levels depending on the person, what they've done, how much they've been able to acquire in this world. So within this, one more point, and that is, there are, depending on how much rishos a person has, and depending on the level of mitzvah they are doing, that mitzvah that they do could either be part of their ticket into Olam Haba, or it can be something which Hashem says, I need to shave that off in order to obliterate the person. What determines whether the mitzvah is going to get them over that threshold into Olam Haba, or whether it's going to have to be shaved away and obliterated? What determines that is all the other choices the person makes. Person makes many, many rishos choices, then Hashem says, this person, he's just overwhelmingly a rasha, therefore, he's in the obliterated scale. He's got a few of these mitzvahs. He may even have some very significant mitzvahs, but Hashem will not allow those mitzvahs to catapult the person into Olam Haba, because the rishus is just so overwhelming, the person is doomed to obliteration, and therefore those tzidkus need to be paid off in Olam Hazeh. Then there could be a person who his mitzvahs aren't that great, but on the other hand, his rishus isn't that great. So those few mitzvahs propel the person into Olam Haba, and the rishus needs to be shaved away, either in Olam Hazeh or in Gehenna. So we never know. And right, okay. So with all of this, these are the first two prakan that we just talked about. With all of this, we've covered some of Tzadik Viralo, some of Rasha Vitovlo, and we've covered we've covered also Olam Haba and Gehenim and obliteration. What we have not covered, we've also covered Rasha Viralo. Why would a Rasha get evil in this world? Well, a Rasha might get evil in this world because of, it could be for several reasons. A Rasha could get around this world either because the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to shave away that Rishus to get the person to Olam Haba, or even if not, he only deserves a certain amount of tov, a certain amount of tzidkus. He only did, right? Hitler Yamach Shemo had to have whatever good he ever did in his life had to be paid off in this world, but only the exact amount, not more. So if it required living a little bit longer, but there had to be some pain because otherwise he'd have too much good. Now he can't get too much good. So that could also be why Rasha is there. What we've not covered is why would a tzaddik get tov in this world? That we've not covered. That hasn't been touched at all. If a person's a tzaddik, meaning a person's a person who Hashem wants to put in Olam Haba, whatever level of tzidkus they're on, why should there be any goodness in this world? The purpose of this world should only be for that person to earn Olam Haba and to shave away the rishus. So every single tzaddik should be Ralo. What we've done is we've turned it on its head. The question, the angel question is, he's a tzaddik, why is his life so terrible? Tzaddik for Ralo. People have gone off the derech because of tzaddik for Ralo. They've felt, how can that be? But so far, the way the Ramchal has explained it is Fakir. Tzadik v'Rabo makes sense. In fact, Tzadik v'Tovlo doesn't make any sense. Why give him good? You don't want to pay him his tzidkus in this world. It's for the next world. It's bad for him to get good in this world. So every single tzaddik should be in dire poverty, should be racked with all kinds of physical ailments, should be whatever. There should be all kinds of ralo for tzaddik. And that should be the norm, not the kasha. That should be the way it is. So then we haven't explained at all. We haven't touched that at all. So that's going to come up in future weeks. And as I said at the outset, this is all the klal. This is not dealing with the individual person. This is dealing with, in general, these are the various systems that are there for Hashem to deal with the general shlemus of the world, which is, of course, based on individual shlemus. But it's not dissecting specifically each person and the good and bad that happens to them. So let's talk a little bit more practically. Let me pause here for any questions, and then I want to talk a little bit more practically.
Wouldn't the Rasha, if the Rasha of Aralo is because he's getting paid back from his Averos, and he only could be paid back for however many mitzvahs he has. So Tzadik v'Tovlo, wouldn't that the answer to that be that he only has a certain amount of Avera, so he only needs a certain amount of pain. Why should he get more pain than his Avera?
Okay, that could be.
If it's like a big tzaddik, but right. If it's like someone who has a lot of good and also a lot of bad, then...
Right, that could be. But still, it should be far more prevalent that, you know, because anybody who has any degree of rishus, yeah, right, it should be constantly, a terrible life just to pay off that rishus.
Also, another question is that, don't we know that Kol Yisrael Yishlam Chilek Olam Haba?
Yes.
So then, how could a Jew, is it possible for then a Jew to be obliterated if Kol Yisrael Yishlam Chilek?
Of course, the difference in Yidden and Goyim is that Kol Yisrael Yishlam Chilek Olam Haba says a person starts with it, but they could lose it. They could lose it, which means that's what happened to Doeg and Tachi Tofel, to Yerav and Ben Nevat. They lost it. And the way they lost it was because they did so much rishus, it overwhelmed at their tzidkus, and that's for Yerav Ben Nevat, for example, who was a huge Talmud Chacham. That it's an amazing thing that he was able to lose it because he had so much tzidkus, but nevertheless he lost it. For Goyim, they have to earn Olam Haba. They have to get there. Now, what does that mean exactly? What does it mean to start with it and need to lose it, or need to earn it? That's a subtlety which is hard to know. As we know that in theory, it's easier to hold on to something than it is to get something. When Chazal say Kol Dar Shalinivah Beis Hamikdash B'Yamav Kilu Nefrav, so if the Beis Hamikdash wasn't built in our days, that means it's as if we destroyed it. What Chazal is saying is, we don't have to do enough mitzvahs to build the Beis Hamikdash, which is much harder than holding on to the Beis Hamikdash. If it were in existence, you don't have to do as many zchusim to hold on to it. So Chazal is saying, in order to get the Beis HaMikdash back, we have to do enough zchusim that if it would have been in existence, it wouldn't have been destroyed. Not that we have to do enough to actually get it built. That's a bracha. Then we don't have to, right? There's less than we have to do. So again, what that difference is in this case, I don't know. It could be he'll talk about it. I don't know if he'll talk about it or not, but that's a good question. Any other questions?
Does that mean there are some of their loss? Like they don't,
the ones who are obliterated?
Yeah.
They're the Gemara speaks about certain Rishayim that their neshamas are scattered under the feet of the tzaddik, and we don't know exactly what that means. But there could be obliteration. Mm-hmm. I mean, which is the worst possible thing, right, to be obliterated. To cease to exist is the worst possible punishment.
So how can we say that a neshama is eternity?
It is. But remember, when a person does mitzvahs, then their guf is drawn to their neshama. When a person does averus, their neshama is drawn to their guf. They are literally turning their neshama into like a guf-like thing. That's what they're doing. They're dragging it away. Now, how that works, I don't know. But they're severing their tie with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you're not tied to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it can't exist.
So how can you say there's always a pentaliyah, right? Let's say you have a menavar, right before he died, right? Always want to say there's a pentaliyah. So
pentaliyah is not a Gemara concept. That's a. But even if you want to say that, The Bindle is talking about self, is talking about a person who is a Tinuk Shenishba, who has had all kinds of terrible things happen in their life, so they've had difficulty holding on to. It's not talking about someone who has made informed decisions of rishos. They can obliterate that. They can obliterate whatever it was. It can also mean that there's always hope at the end that they'll do teshuva. Yesh kan olam v'sha'achas. It's possible to do teshuva at the very end. But if they don't,
then
they don't. I mean, no, that's. But again, here we're getting into individual people. What you're talking about is more specific to the person, and he's going to discuss that later. So let's at the risk of, this isn't recorded, at the risk of getting in trouble by naming names, let's just give an example, and let's just discuss practically how to think about it on this level. I've had this discussion with my children. Right? Bill Gates. I don't know if he's the wealthiest person in the world, but certainly it has been the wealthiest person, or perhaps he still is the wealthiest person in the world. Okay, so wealth is a bracha, and he was given incredible bracha. It's not because of his brains, it's not because of his ingenuity. He was in the right place at the right time with the right training, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to give him all this wealth. Now, at this point, what we've learned so far, now there could be more that we're going to learn which will change this. Now, he's not a yid, he's a guy, but he's still part of humanity. So from what we've learned so far, you see a person who has unbelievable bracha in their lives. Unbelievable bracha. Now, let's preface our remarks by saying, we don't know that he doesn't have yesurit. We know that he has an amazing bracha. Everybody will tell you that wealth is great, but it also comes with a great deal of there's a lot of downside to great wealth. Everybody says, I want to be wealthy enough that I'm comfortable, but I don't want to be wealthy enough to have all the problems that come with the wealth. Problem is, there's no middle ground. Okay? You're either lacking, you either feel like you're lacking, or you've crossed that threshold and you don't feel like you're lacking anymore, and then you have other problems. So it's never really that good. But at least we know that wealth is a bracha. So he's got the let's assume the wealthiest man in the world, so he's got the biggest bracha of wealth possible in this world, at least in our day. Could be Shlomo HaMelech was wealthier. Don't know. But in our day. So how do we interpret that? How do we assimilate that? How do we deal with that fact? So let's go through. Now, let's for argument's sake say he doesn't have any Yisurin, which I don't think is probably not true. But let's for argument's sake say that's all he has, is this incredible bracha. So does that mean he's a Tzadik Gomor? Perhaps. We haven't discussed Tzadik V'Tovlo, but if he has no rishus, then what else is there? Right? So okay. Maybe that's an answer, except that it's hard to believe it's Tzadik Gomor. Right? I mean, I don't follow the media. I never look at any media things. But I assume that if you Google his name or whatever, you'll come up with some bad things about him too. I assume. Okay. So you can't say he's a Tzadik Gomor. So what are your choices left? Is he sort of a Tzadik, sort of a Rasha? Well, if he's sort of a Tzadik, sort of a Rasha, wouldn't he need to have some rishus shaved off in order that he can enter Olam Haba? Okay. Well, maybe the rishus is so bad that you got to shave. The only place to shave it off is after death, is in Gehenna. That means he has no rishus that can be shaved off in this world. The only rishus that could be shaved off is in Gehenna. It's hard to believe, right? It's likely that anybody who has rishus that is going to be shaved off in Gehenna also has rishus that will be shaved off in this world. It's just that there's so much of it, or there's some that are so big they have to be saved for Gehenna. So, what's the most likely scenario? The most likely answer is that he's a Rasha. That is the most likely thing. And from what we've learned so far, someone who has been given an amazing amount of bracha, and there's no recognizable yesurin for that person. The person is having an unbelievably pleasurable life, and there's no downside. It's almost like we have to assume the person is a Rasha.
And will be obliterated.
Right. That they're just getting all of their... They did some kind of big schus that has to be paid off, and then eventually they're going to be obliterated. That's almost like you have to presume that. unless the person is a great, great, great tzaddik, a known great tzaddik, then okay, then we can say differently. But since most people are not like that, we have to presume, so far again, and we haven't learned everything yet, but at this juncture, we have to say that if a person's life is so sweet, so beautiful, so great, they must be a Rasha. That's what we're holding right now. Now, again, let me temper this with a few points. One is that I don't believe that his life is so sweet and so beautiful, so great. I think there are plenty of issues he has in his life. I'm not trying to defend him. To me, I don't care whether he's a Rasha. That's not my point. I have no vested interest in defending him. I'm just saying that I just know people, and it's very people. You look from the outside, you say, "Oh, that person has it all," and when you get on the inside, you realize there's a lot of issues, and it's not simple at all. And perhaps they don't have to worry about the food they're going to put on the table, and they don't have to worry about paying for the next vacation. But there are a whole bunch of other stuff, not even wealth related. That's emotional issues, and there's all kinds of other stuff that they have to deal with, and that's not So that's number one. That's one caveat. Another caveat is that since we haven't learned further, that we haven't learned other reasons for tremendous bracha, etc. So we don't know. But at least we have to take from here that don't be so jealous of a person's really, really big brachas. Because it's not just that the brachas that I have are not necessarily good for you, that's really where he's going to go later with individual things, because it has to do with your particular nisayon in life. And who says that being wealthy is good for you to reach shleimus? Right? So that's a different discussion completely. Nothing to do with what we talked about tonight. So forget that whole thing. But even without that, if you're a person that is going to Olam Haba, and that Hashem wants whatever Chas V'Shalom Rishus a person has to be shaved off, whether it's hopefully here and not in Gehenna, then you don't want a life that's perfect. You don't want that. You don't want a life that is just beautiful, excellent, everything is great. I have all the best food, I have, and I don't gain any weight, and I have all the I have all the great clothes, and the best house, and best family, and I'm brilliant, and I have all the greatest friends. And you don't want a life like that, because that means that there's no rishus being shaved off. So that, and no one has a life like that. Let's face it, we all have issues in our lives, right? But when those things happen, recognize it for what it is. When you stub your toe and it hurts, rishus is being shaved off. You are being set up for Olam Haba. That's what's happening. It's a beautiful thing. It's a really beautiful thing. It's hard to remember that when you're popping on one foot in agony, right? But it's a beautiful thing. The rishus is being shaved away. That's what's happening. I'll end with this. I think I told you this once before. Rabbi Walk, Olav HaShalom, who used to be a Rebbe in Baltimore. He was a Rebbe in Sheres HaPleita. He was a Rebbe in Beis Yaakov, and he was the principal of Mechina High School in Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Walk once said to me that people have little aches, pains, troubles, whatever those little troubles are, you're involved, whatever it is, whatever work you're doing, and your boss gets angry at you, or you're trying to apply for a program, and it gets messed up on the computer, and end up you have to wait 6 months to apply again. Whatever little things happen like that, which are very frustrating. But we say in the davening for Yom Kippur, we say that Yihir Atzma Funecha Hashem Elokeinu Melech Yisrael Eloheinu Shelo Echa Ta'od. I shouldn't do any more averus. Uma Shechatasi Kvar, what I've already sinned, Marek Barachamecha Harabim. In your great Rachamim, get rid of it. Get rid of it. Shave it away. Get rid of it. But don't do it with terrible yisurim, terrible afflictions, and terrible sicknesses. So Rabbi Walk used to say, so how do you want him to do it? You want to get rid of all my affairs, but don't give me big sicknesses and don't give me big afflictions. So then what do you want? So he said, what you want is, you want a bunch of little ones. That's what you want. you want to stub your toe, and you want to have trouble applying for a program, and you want to have whatever it is, you want to have that your best outfit got stained. That's what you want. That's the way that you're going to get everything shaved away. That's good. And if we only could remember that when it happens, we'd be much happier people. Any other questions?
Yeah, so Yisurim in this world would always come before Gehenim?
Would that be the choice? That would be definitely the choice, if it's possible.
No, I'm saying like a person wouldn't have a great world and then...
And then Gehenim. Well, no, I was only saying that is a possibility. That is a possibility. The only thing I was saying is that if they have the types of Averis that need Gehenim, you would imagine they probably have the types of Averis that could use some Yisurim in this world too. Maybe not, but I mean, I'm just saying likely. It is theoretically possible that they only have Averis that need Gehenim, and they have nothing that can be taken care of in this world. That is possible.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.